The redistricting piece to me as not the finance chair, but the citizen was the piece that made me say, okay, let's do the open.
Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet, WFPR.FM, and in the local Franklin Mass FM radio dial 102.9. Here today for a special chalkboard chat with two people, our finance representative from the FinCom, Chair George Conley. George, how are you doing?
I'm doing absolutely fine. Now that I found the place this meeting was, I'm good.
Excellent. And it's a chalkboard chat because we got school committee vice chair and FinCom designate, Dave McNeil. Dave, how are you doing this Monday?
Doing very well, Steve. Thank you very much. It's good to be with you and George, speaking to the both of you, and thank you for having us.
Yeah. And the purpose of this is really to kind of, and for those who are really saying, wait a minute, chalkboard chat usually looks at the school committee meeting. Well, you didn't have, you had one last week, and we've already got Dave Callahan later this week to cover that part. But you also had this FinCom presentation, so that's what we'll do here. So you went through the presentation, obviously, in for the frame of reference, FinCom got a brief update from Town Administrator Jamie Helen on Tri-County and Norfolk Aggie. Their representation couldn't make it this time. Respectfully, they're relatively minor. It's a number of students, and then we get an allocation of the cost per student. Finance side on the school committee, obviously, and the total is what, 70% of the town budget combined is schools. So, yeah, while we've seen the presentation in its course of development during this budget season, you made a couple of fine tweaks in the presentation last week.
Yeah, exactly. And thank you for mentioning that. So, you know, as we've discussed this year, you know, the school committee approved a budget of $81.3 million, and that budget is designed to both stabilize and partially restore some cuts and resources and positions that have been taken away these past couple of years, and really to infuse the support that we believe Franklin students need, particularly now coming out of the pandemic. And this budget includes a number of different support professionals and educational positions that we think are necessary for that. And as you mentioned, we were talking at FinCom last week about the about how those positions and this budget could be shaped one way or the other, and how it might look differently if the override doesn't pass, quite frankly. So one of the big things that we hit on was talking and getting kind of more into the nitty gritty of what some of those cuts will look like. So, you know, already we're looking at about, I believe, the difference between the school committee approved budget and the town council approved budget. I think it's around a $6.3 million deficit or something like that. You know, that gap translates into not only cuts to staffing and programming, but of course increases in certain fees. So we're looking, if nothing changes and the override doesn't pass next month, we're looking at about 47 teachers or more that could be cut. And those are, you know, different teachers and across the board, and different, you know, support professionals and potentially administrators. Of course, you know, we have certain educational requirements that are primary, and we need to and we're obligated to give first and foremost. So, you know, those will remain, but the places that, you know, aren't required to us by law or regulation would be the places that those would be coming from, as well as other programming that would be scaled back. And, you know, we would be taking a look at cuts in different places as well. You know, the positions that I just alluded to that are being proposed in the stabilized budget, those of course wouldn't happen. I mean, they don't exist now, so they wouldn't be happening in that revised budget. We'd also be getting, some other supplies or stipends, other things that would be cut, but then we would see a significant increase in the fees and the fee structure, which was discussed in the both policy and budget subcommittee meetings in the past couple of weeks as well. So you would get an example of sports, a tiered system that would fully fund athletics. So the most expensive ones, say hockey and football, they would need to be fully self-funded, about $1,000 per student, and then it would kind of be on a sliding scale. And it's things like that that people don't always think about that are being subsidized through the budget. And we wouldn't want to completely eliminate a sport if we don't have to, but in this case, in order to be fiscally responsible with the resources that we have, they would need to be they would need to be completely self-funded. And then transportation is something as well. Or we were discussing having transportation costs go from, I think, 360 or 350 to 1,100 per student. And at policy this past week, we discussed, that is probably quite untenable for most families. And we will probably get an enormous drop off in ridership that the revenue simply wouldn't be there. So instead, those fees would be adjusted, again, if the override doesn't go through, to 500. And that would result in those, and again, more cuts on the staff side of things. And these aren't things that we take lightly, and these aren't things that are fun to talk about or that we certainly want. So that's why, again, we're very grateful to our partners in town government, on the town council, who put the override measure on the ballot for next month to allow the voters to decide if ultimately they want these cuts to go through or not. And a couple other things that you mentioned, Steve, that were hit upon. Jamie mentioned that. Jamie mentioned that there was additional funding, through the Senate Ways and Means budget that's been happening through the state budget process. So I think about $335,000 or so that'll also be added to the school budget. So we'll be adjusting that accordingly. And then we're getting some shelter supplemental reimbursement that's been coming from the state, which will, again, that money goes directly towards the resources being used for the new arrivals. That's about $385,000 that is going to subsidize those students as well. And lastly, Dr. Dutch did a great job of projecting out the override amounts. And I would recommend people go back and take a look at the slides from the FinCom, because it's a great projection. And as Jamie mentioned, not set in stone at this point, because things could change. We don't know exactly how future revenues, what exactly those are going to look like in terms of new growth and revenue collection. But it was a good overall representation of the concept of how the 60-40 split is going to be looking for the schools, and how the additional 2.5% year-over-year increase in the tax levy will also benefit us. And I think also in that discussion, we mentioned of how our redistricting that the school committee voted on at the past meeting, which of course I'll leave that to Dave Callahan later on in the week to get into get into the details more with you that. But even though the fiscal situation and redistricting, they're not the same exact thing, but they are certainly connected in terms of how we efficiently use our resources and try to maximize our educational resources, but our physical space to deliver the best quality educational experience for Franklin students that we possibly can. And even though the savings primarily aren't financial, we will be seeing, I think, about $750,000 every year in facility savings. And then I think a little shy of $10 million over the course of 10 years in proposed capital projects. And so, those funds that are being saved will be otherwise utilized for capital projects for the buildings that we will be using to maximize those spaces and to make sure that, again, we're being as fiscally prudent, resourceful, and efficient with taxpayer dollars that we can be with the money that we're given. So, a lot going on there, and there were some good updates, but I'd like to stress again, we're not going to be in a great place, if the override doesn't pass, and if we don't get this if we're not able to right the ship here, because there will be some hard choices that will need to be made to, again, just make sure that we're able to live within our means. But we're doing all that we can to adjust and to make sure that we're allocating those things in the best way possible.
To reinforce and kind of restate your first point in regards to kind of stabilize and then restore some of the services, particularly around the middle schools, the middle school after school activities and the middle school busing, the late bus in order to accommodate that, that assumes that the override passes. And yeah. Then if it doesn't, as you mentioned, certainly the teachers get cut. I think two areas of concern that should be noted by the parents. One, kind of from the high school, to reinforce your point, you have to keep the core subjects, the English, social studies, et cetera. So some of the electives, to the extent that those are vulnerable, could be the ones that's where the teachers will go. But then the other side of that, at least in the elementary and middle school levels, is class sizes will rise potentially. So I know that's been one of your objectives and was part of the override increase as well, to maintain, especially through redistricting, a more equivalent or a more equitable level of class sizes across the district. But if we don't get the override, then, that's off the table, so to speak.
Yeah, and thank you for bringing that up with class sizes. So again, as you mentioned, that was one of the primary lenses that our admin team and we on the school committee saw the budget through as it was being crafted, because class sizes, especially the younger grades and the developmental levels, that attention that teachers and educators and support staff are able to give to students is so crucial. And the more individualized education and attention that they can give, it really pays dividends in the long run in terms of how much they're able to grow and learn all throughout, and not just at the lower level, but particularly in that developmental stage. But it is essential all throughout the school age years. And you're exactly right. So the new positions that we're adding, they are intended to stabilize classroom sizes through that way. But as you said again right there, the redistricting is to make sure that the physical spaces that students and teachers are in, that they're able to be spread and allocated as best as possible and as efficiently as possible to even things out, have a bit more equitable space. So no matter what, whether or not the override passes, redistricting will still do the best with what we can have, but we really do need the override to pass to make sure that we are where we want to be.
And George, as chair of the finance committee, certainly you sat through, this was the third of your budget hearings where you realistically take not just the deep dives that were immortalized, effectively immortalizing the Bill Dowd series, but really getting to the level of detail that respectfully the town council doesn't, because you do that for them and they can just read the budget line item and then do a hold here, where from a resident perspective, taxpayer perspective, we really want to find out what the drivers are for each of the budgets, from whether it's DPW, recreation, or in this case, clearly schools. Your place is the place to find that.
I always think of us as the balance. We have to, the balance of the watchdog. I don't know how to put it. But I sit there and I think, man, we've got to make sure that every department gets what it absolutely needs to function. And admittedly, the school committee's been, I'll call it, shortchanged over the years. But so have the others to some extent. For instance, the fire department's had three people that they needed 6 years. 5 years ago. And it's always, I don't know, I get so, I'll tell you something. The redistricting piece, to me, as not the finance chair, but the citizen, was the piece that made me say, okay, let's do the open. I'll just say that because, you know, I've my little rants every now and then have been to think outside the box, guys. I get ripped on Facebook. That was the meeting where I put up the slide that said, you know, enrollment costs going up, you know, that kind of thing. How can you think outside the box when it's all controlled and whatnot? But now there's thinking outside the box. I don't think the previous administration did that. So it's a tough road. I am personally pro override, which makes my wife crazy, but that's all right. I don't know. It's just what we saw this year, by the way, was the best, without a doubt, presentation, financials from the school committee in my 10 or 12 years on the thing. Really was. And if you think about it a lot, what they said just made sense. Simple. I'll be frustrated if it goes down in flames, the override goes down in flames, because there's so much misinformation. And I'm a Facebook guy. I read it all. Frustrating as
I share your frustration because clearly you're doing the deep dive. You're asking the questions. You're getting the answers. Then I take those answers and share them out and get, where did they get that number? That was never in an official meeting. I have no idea where that number came from. And yet, you know, people are saying, oh, this is what's going to happen. It's like, where? How? Why?
I was just looking at our meeting. I don't think has had 30 or 40 views. I watched the YouTube version while the meeting was going on, mm-hmm. and we never got over 7
simultaneous watchers.
The people that sat down in a chair and watched the meeting,
right?
Maybe 6 or 7 in that range, anyway.
Yeah,
I don't know how many since. I'm gonna look. It's frustrating.
And then, fortunately, there are some who will listen to my audio of that. Because it kind of fits their either drive time or whatever on their commute, or they can be doing housework and listening in the background and hearing the questions and answers, and then they're prepared. So, but I'm sure you have some frustrations, Dave, as well, or maybe that's a false assumption, but.
Well, I'm of course of the belief that, you know, more of the right information is always the best way to go. And you know, that's why I appreciate the opportunity to discuss all that, you know, all the work we've been doing right now here with you, Steve, and for putting that out there. And thank you, George, for your kind words of our presentation. Now we appreciate you saying that. And as you touched upon with the redistricting vote, I think we acknowledge that, we want to be, responsible and efficient with, the taxpayers, and show them that we want to do the best of what we have and to maximize it. And it's not just about the taxpayers. At the end of the day, what's good for Franklin students and good for Franklin education, that goes hand in hand in terms of what's best for taxpayers in this case. And that is what we're doing here. We want to make sure that we're creating the best school system for all that we possibly can, and at the same time doing that as fiscally efficiently as possible. And then, we acknowledge that, and that's why we chose to go through with the redistricting recommendation. And this was a process that started a while back with Davis there, and this was a similar recommendation to this was. It wasn't proposed then, but it was kind of mentioned, like, Davis Thayer really needs to close, but this is something that probably should be taken a look at because there are bigger issues down the line. And this was this report with these recommendations was the result of that. So that kind of idea 5 years ago, and then this study was commissioned last year to really take a deep dive and to analyze the implications of this particular plan. And because this has been a process that started back then, and there was a vote to commission this study last year, we on the school committee, we finally had the belief and confidence in the process that this is the right thing to do, and this is the information we're looking for, and so let's go ahead and do it and do it as soon as possible, because we want to make sure that, you know, we're not wasting time, and again, not having an opportunity cost in terms of the resources and what we're doing with what we have. So that was, you know, the impetus behind that decision. And again, even though it's not directly tied to the override in terms of the redistricting being a financial savior, they are certainly related in when it comes to doing the most with what we have in the school. So a lot of big things and big changes happening, but we really do hope that at the end of the day, we are going to be in a much sunnier place when it comes to our fiscal outlook, but also the educational supports and services and experiences that we are providing to Franklin students.
Funny you mentioned the redistricting and the overall impact. Mm-hmm. It has a hidden impact. Let's face it, you know, we're facing a $30 or $40 million expenditure to build a police station. If the redistricting didn't happen, we'd have a $5 million land cost. And that will go away, because that is prime site up. I actually knew the parliamentist, so, you know, it's a little bit, my brother-in-law used to pick eggs for, believe it or not, they actually had eggs up there. But it is financially, it's going to be, what's land going to cost now in this town? $4 or $5 million for a police station? Now that cost goes away. Interesting, you know, balance of the town versus the schools is where cooperation really works, really works. And that is real money, real money.
Oh, sure, absolutely. And I would like to be clear and clarify that, you know, this redistricting plan, it's for students first. And that is, of course, the lens that we in the school committee see it through, and the reason for our vote, that first and foremost, it's going to be providing a more equitable experience across the board for students. And it's going to be it's going to provide the best possible system for education. And with that also comes more fiscal allocation of resources. And in this particular case, and in this particular time, it also happens to coincide very well with a town project that we're looking at. So I agree with that. We're happy to cooperate and collaborate. But at the end of the day, we of course in the school committee are tasked with, you know, putting the students first, and that was the primary focus and driver behind the decision. But we are very happy that when it comes to any town plans for the site, that it also works out well.
Strangely enough, I've done it, not strangely enough, I do that. I've read a lot about what the combining of K through five or six, it's five, right?
K through five.
Yeah, when you read what's happened around the country, not here, it's good for the kids. It really is. It's good for them. And that little bit of time, of the 3 years, or 2 or 3 years they'll have near the high school where they can kind of integrate into what's going to happen to them in a couple of years, it's good for them. So this whole thing makes so much sense, so much sense. And that you're listening to an original skeptic.
Well, thank you for saying that. And I'm sure Steve is looking forward to talking to Dave more about that later on this week too.
By the way, just one thing, Steve, the school committee meeting on the 14th, which is the night before our meeting, has had 858 views.
Yeah, that's because of the redistricting decision. Yes,
absolutely. Yeah. And even the FinCon has now had 154, which is 10 times more than we get.
Right.
On a normal basis.
Yeah, and your
people are paying attention. At least I hope so.
Well, in your April 17th session actually got more than the FinCom budget hearing number 3, because that's when the Jamie's first budget or official budget was being reviewed by you.
Okay, I wasn't looking at that one.
Yeah, but I just did a quick scroll through the playlist and it's like, oh, look at that. Oh, yeah, there are folks watching. Yeah,
absolutely.
And I think that reinforces the couple of the key points that, you know, when something really hits people in terms of either the pocketbook or my kid's school, they will pay attention, right? So, you know, I will take the onus I was the one who lobbied heavily for the master plan of the school committee not to be called master plan because, oh, by the way, the town council and the town already had the 10-year master plan underway. And if you got two master plans, people are going to get confused all over the place. So they came up with the creative comprehensive school facility plan, which effectively says exactly what they were doing without committing, because they couldn't. They didn't know what the results were going to be. Yay, verily, they were generally going to lead to a redistricting, but in what way and how and whatever. So you need to let the situation play its way out. So I'll take the blame on that one, but I think we've ended up in the right place. And in terms of kind of one of the other misnomers, I'll just slide in there. So five elementaries in five buildings go into four elementaries in two buildings. That's called consolidation. That's called better efficiency. And to your point earlier, we talked earlier about, you know, class sizes, teacher ratios. Instead of distributing elementary teachers across five places, now you've got two places. Some of the disparities that we were seeing from a 16 or 18 teacher ratio to a 24, 25, 26, that should go away, respectfully. And again, assuming the override passes, so you get at least the teachers that you want in order to do that.
Hopefully hold on to them. That's the other side.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, it wouldn't make sense to have, you know, one teacher with one class that's, you know, very small, and another teacher with another class that's very large, if we can choose to consolidate and have things be more, you know, be more reasonably allocated. And, you know, I mean, primarily it makes sense from an educational standpoint, but secondarily it also makes sense from a financial standpoint. So, when it makes sense from both of those places, then that's why we went for it.
Yeah. And in terms of the longevity and some of the uncertainty about the future, assuming an override passes, then some of the pieces that I know you've picked up on, George, and members of your committee have, in terms of what's the cost of, you know, layoffs and unemployment, et cetera, et cetera. And then just the teacher churn from year to year, based on the uncertainty of where are we? Are we going to be around for a while? In which case, the highly credited teachers are going to be ones that are most mobile. And oh, by the way, they can get more money in one of the neighborhood places. Why not? I mean, that's a good personal choice for them. Yeah, it hurts us to a certain extent, but at some point in time, we're going to have to, you know, put the money on the table in order to keep them.
Somebody made the point that their child had had five math teachers last year, five of them. I mean, how can you? Everybody has a different style. We have three different styles right here. You imagine five different teachers? Holy crap. That's insane. We didn't have that turnover with nuns, but that's another story. Okay.
Different world.
Yes, it is. Very different world.
And some of the accreditations, especially in the math, depending upon what the specializations are, those math folks can make much more money, you know, not even in the education sphere, you know, in an actuarial firm or, you know, other opportunities. So,
sure. And that's, you know, that's ultimately the purpose of this plan, to make sure that, you know, we're, you know, putting our people power exactly where it needs to be and keeping those educators here in Franklin and our resources allocated in the most efficient and pointed way possible to, you know, give the students the best educational outcomes that they can have.
Well, anecdotally, I'm sitting here, I'm on my laptop, my desktop is over here. The picture that just came up, picture of my niece Allison graduating from Providence College, which I know has nothing to do with the Franklin School, except that the very last override in 7 or 8, Allie was part of the student group that really worked their butts off to get it passed. Mm. And in fact, the picture of the late great Milford Daily News on the front page is a picture of Allison with her fist up when the results were announced. Figure that's the last time we had an override, and the only time.
2007 was the only successful operational override.
We've had, you know, building overrides, that kind of
yeah.
stuff. And that,
yeah.
Those operational override. Yeah.
Yeah. The building overrides, respectfully, are generally successful. And I say generally because there's been at least two or three that had multiple tries. And they failed on the first couple and then finally got fine-tuned so that they got passed. Harris Mann being the one in particular that I'm thinking of, but there may have been others. I think we've kind of written that financial story, or at least kind of condensed it, hopefully, for people to understand. So thank you both for sharing your time and insights to do so.
Thank you very much for having us. We appreciate the opportunity.
Always nice to see you, Steve, even remote.
Even remote. Oh, good. Yes. Well, thank you both for participating. And quick reminder to the listeners, oh, by the way, that you can vote now through June 11th. And we ask that you at least cast an informed vote, however which way you decide, make it be informed. And then a final reminder for the listeners, we do this because Franklin matters.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.